This is VK6 Amateur Radio News with NewsWest for Sunday the 18th of October. This week we have a silent key tribute for John VK6HZ, and then we'll be delving into the history of amateur radio with some extracts from the Amateur Radio magazine in 1950 and a newspaper item from 1913 about the establishment of early ship-to-shore radio in Western Australia. There's news from the regulator, the ACMA, some local news, and some feedback from News West listeners. And of course, there's always more on News West. The News West team this week is Mike VK6KMS, Jeff VK6FJLM, Roy VK6X-Ray Victor, and I'm Bob VK6POP, the News West producer. Recently, we heard of the tragic accidental death of John VK6 Hotel Zulu. John first obtained his amateur radio license in 1984 as VK2 Vox, and since then has been the holder of several call signs over the years: VK2 Vox, VK2, 3 and 6 KKD, VK6 KK, VK6 HZ, VK6 EW, VK6 ARI, and VK6 XX. Gosh, he was sure busy on the call signs. John was very active and well known in contesting, and he had earned several awards from the United States, 5 in fact, some of these with extra endorsements. John was working towards his worked all states triple play. Now, this is a challenge considering that here in VK6 we're about as far from the USA as one can get. John was very active on FT8 on 20 metres and 40 metres, and is also on the N8FQ log book of the World Forums looking for states for the Worked All States Award. And Lynn VK6LIN said he only met John for a short time recently, and he struck me as a nice and generous ham who liked to help other hams. And from John VK6NU, John said it's very sad news that we've lost one of our contest community and former club member due to a tragic accident. John Ferrington VK6HZ and VK6XX, which he was using for contest activity, was killed in an accident. John was on a bicycle that was involved in an accident with a bus. John was a past member of the Northern Corridors radio group and had many very close mates at the club. He was just a great guy that you could meet once or twice a year and just catch up like you last met him yesterday. John was a busy guy with work, a young family, and he loved his music and playing in a local band. John recently got into fitness and doing charity cycles, etc. In the past few months, he was really getting back into amateur radio, and he was always a keen contester. John said he thinks he may have been in the Oceania contest recently as VK6XX. John came to Perth from VK2, so probably has some close contest mates there too. John will be sadly missed by all of his Western Australian mates. And our deepest sympathy goes out to John's family. Vale, John, VK6 Hotel Zulu, now silent key.
From the AR magazine, September 1950, the editorial from the Federal Executive: Respect the conditions of your license. Most amateurs who undertake to operate an experimental station remember the obligations they have agreed to observe under the Commonwealth regulations as set out in the Wireless Telegraphy Act. It is easy to overlook the fact that you signed a statutory declaration when you were granted a license to operate your station. In accordance with the regulations laid down by the Postmaster General's Department, who direct all amateurs under these provisions, you agreed to observe these regulations in all respects. You are earnestly recommended to reread your handbook for operators of amateur wireless stations with a view to refreshing your memory on your responsibilities under the Act with respect to the maintenance of secrecy of all forms of communications heard by you. Occasionally, we hear some criticisms concerning the security aspects of amateur radio in the Commonwealth, and suggestions have been made that a radio amateur may provide a source of leakage which would have a subversive effect on the security of this country. If such criticisms is well-founded, which we very much doubt, we suggest that you carefully consider your activities in the light of the requirements of the Commonwealth Investigation Service, whose responsibility it is to ensure that all licensees are loyal and responsible citizens to the Commonwealth of Australia.
From the Northern Times, Carnarvon, on Saturday the 15th of March 1913, comes the article called Wireless at Sea, the Western Australia's Operator, His Career and Present Work. Let's put this article into some context. We are talking 107 years ago when radio amateur was in its infant stages and, to make matters worse, at sea. The article isn't clear about the subject's involvement in amateur radio. However, I'd bet that he was, as then described, a radio experimenter. So let's get on with the story. Mr. G. Bracey, a wireless operator on the state steamer West Australia, is one of the three government servants who, some years ago, received permission from the Commonwealth Government to erect private wireless stations in the metropolis. Mr. Bracey's antennas, being installed at his private house in Mount Lawley and the other near the railway at Congdon Street and another at Field Street in Mount Lawley. He was originally an electrician and operator, and though always experimenting in telegraphy, he considered the scope and remuneration limited and went into the electrical engineers department, where he got a good groundwork in fitting and put in a lot of spare time experimenting in atmospherics. He was therefore in a peculiarly fortunate position when the Marconi system came into practical and somewhat general use, and he had no difficulty in getting the Commonwealth's license to install his instruments after passing the necessary examination in 1910. The warship Challenger, on her first visit to Australia, was the first steamer he picked up, and he was able to receive many messages before the Applecross station was opened. Mr. Bracey's knowledge of fitting is one of his chief advantages to the West Australia, as for the ports called at do not provide facilities for having new parts fitted. An ordinary operator might soon find out after leaving Fremantle that his instruments have been thrown out of commission through a part breaking and the further working of the apparatus made impossible until his return to Fremantle. The whole of the day before our conversation, he had spent repairing a radio defect. The government took into consideration his advantage in this direction when appointing him to the West Australia, a warship of the time, for all the gear at his private station had been constructed by himself in his spare time. Another advantage Mr. Bracey holds by his experiments in atmospherics, which in the tropics largely affect the working of the wireless. He demonstrated to us in some measure the difficulties to be contended with by allowing us to use the receiver and listen to the periodical buzzings caused by atmospheric disturbances. He says there is a big field for the study of atmospherics in the tropics where the wind and lightning are terrific. The buzzings are reliable indications of coming storms. A week previously, the loud noise in the receiving gear during the earlier part of the day gave indication of a storm nearby, and later the ship was caught in a willy-willy and had to anchor so as to weather it out. The master, Captain Roger, did not leave the bridge, and the operator stuck to his instrument ready to follow the captain's orders at any time that he deemed it expedient to send a message. The steward brought them a meal as the storm continued, and only when the genial captain appeared at the Marconi room door with a pipe in his mouth and a smile on his face did the operator rise from his chair. The radio operator is under the captain's orders alone, and in all anxious times has to stand by his instrument while the captain is on the bridge. Even when the vessel is leaving a port, for instance as Port Hedland, the operator is still on duty until the bar is crossed and the vessel is on its way. In the daytime, he places the receivers to his ears for the first few minutes of each hour in case any vessel is calling for help, while at night He is on constant duty from dark until midnight, as most messages are sent during those hours. If there is a crush of vessels desiring to get into communication with the Applecross, their names are taken and the messages received in rotation. By the use of a tuner, messages not intended for a particular station or steamer may be tuned out. The wireless instruments on the Western Australia were purchased in Liverpool from the Marconi Company and installed by the company there, and then handed over to the state government's complete control. The Marconi Nye Company, as is well known, declines to do this for private ships owners. The P&O Company, for instance, have to carry Marconi's own operators, who reserve for their principals a certain proportion of monies paid for radio telegrams. The apparatus is at present capable of receiving at night, when conditions are favourable, from a distance of 2,000 miles. On the trip before last, the operator kept in touch with the warship Drake, which left Fremantle from the old land some days before the West Australia, until the later vessel was close to Wyndham. The West Australia, also on her last trip, when nearing Carnarvon, heard the P&O Company's Moree, 1,070 miles away on the other side of Cape Leeuwin. The distance message carried depends, of course, upon the atmospheric conditions. One night, for instance, a message was sent by low-power current just sufficient to reach Geraldton, and to the operator's astonishment, Applecross picked her up. On the last trip up, Applecross was heard all the way to Wyndham, in spite of the atmospherics. It is not known whether Applecross picked up the West Australia. If a line is drawn across the map from Cape Londoree to Fremantle, some idea will be got of the extent of land and hill crossed by the Applecross messages. When the West Australia was between Broome and Derby, the operator picked up the Riverina at Albany. In conjunction with the consulting engineers from the State Steamship Service, Mr. Bracey is planning the installation of new gear, which will greatly facilitate receiving messages from very long distances, and an extension over the headgear down towards the stern of the vessel has already been done largely in the British Navy. The electric plant used for sending messages is enclosed in a padded room and is capable of very high voltage. The power is supplied from the engine room. Should that power fail through the flooding of the engine room or any other cause, then emergency gear is available, connected with accumulators giving 20,000 volts. Mr. Bracey remarks that when the series of land stations is complete, vessels will never be out of touch with port, and those mysteries of the sea, such as the unsolved disappearance of the Yongala and Cormabana, will be rendered unlikely. That's the end of the article. Londonderry Point, for those of you who don't know, is the northernmost part of Western Australia. 73s.
News West continues a tradition of amateur radio news broadcasts which commenced in Perth in 1931. Our aim is to provide Western Australians with news about amateur radio, which is of interest and relevance to Western Australian amateurs. News West is produced by WA Amateur Radio News, which is an amateur radio club incorporated in Western Australia. WA Amateur Radio News maintains editorial independence, although we are a Wireless Institute of Australia affiliated club and have open dealings with the Radio Amateur Society of Australia, neither of those bodies have influence over our news content. Both the WIA and RASA have received an open invitation to contribute news items and announcements to News West. The Wireless Institute declined, and RASA contributes items from time to time. It's worth noting that the Wireless Institute of Australia, at the open forum following its annual general meeting this year, was critical of News West, however no particulars or evidence were given. Just a sneering reference to News West. The Wireless Institute has never discussed editorial content with WA Amateur Radio News. What we ask you, the Western Australian amateur, is to support News West by contributing stories and information in order to improve local news content. As I've said previously, Western Australia punches above its weight when it comes to our participation in the national amateur radio scene, and let's keep it up. I'm Bob VK6BOP, the News West producer.
Since 1931, News West has provided amateur radio news for Western Australia and beyond. This is VK6ARN.
AR Magazine, September 1950, The Western Australia Report. The July meeting was held in the Institute Rooms on Tuesday the 18th. The attendance was slightly better than the previous month, which is all to the good. There were no country representatives present, but 6ZO from down Fremantle Way, whom we had not seen for a long, long time, was duly welcomed to the meeting. The highlight of the meeting was the presentation of the President's Trophy by the President 6KW to 6FL, the outright winner of the recent 40-metre scramble. For his fine effort in working 44 out of a possible 47 stations, Frank received a very handsome silver fruit dish and responded suitably, thanking all those stations who provided him with contacts during the contest. The winners of the other sections of the contest were also announced. To 6WZ of Geraldton went the Institute Trophy for the highest scoring country entry. Harry made 32 contacts, but one was disallowed by the contest committee, giving him a score of 31. The winner of the 6JN Trophy for the best effort on the miles per watt basis was won by 6XG of Katanning, who, operating with 2.9 watts input, worked Geraldton approximately 130 miles per watt. Congratulations, fellows, from us all. Unfortunately, two high-scoring logs from the country could not be accepted by the contest committee due to breaches of the rules, and the committee has written to those members explaining just why their logs were not acceptable, hoping that those mistakes will not be made in the next contest of a similar nature. 6WH Ted Doddy is back from his jaunt down the Great Southern and is ready to take over the emergency network again. Saw quite a few of the country boys and had a good time, thanks to all. It is reported that following a CWQSO with 6KU the other day, 6MK had a week off from work, suffering from a sprained right foot. I believe 6PW will take unto himself a YF early in September. Congratulations, Ray, and all the best in the world to you both from all the gang in VK6. This division would welcome photographs of past events in the history of the division to commence the compiling of an album, so that in the years to come, we will have a permanent record of the early days of amateur radio in this state. No news to hand from the Goldfields gang. 6DX is heard regularly down here on 40 and 80 with a very nice signal, and 6GU seems to have the DC problem well licked up in Boulder. Well, that's about the issue for this month, fellows. Don't forget to let me have any scandal you can dig up, and I'll do my best to air it for you in this column. I wonder if that photo album still exists.
From Steve VK6SJ. Steve says we have the VK6 Club News due in the next week, and a month after that for the next two editions. So could you please all get your contributions to Steve before the 19th of October and the 19th of November. So get on your bikes, it's not far away. Now it's nice to get some feedback from people about how we're going with News West. We don't get a lot, but what we do receive is encouraging. Here's a few from the feedback form on the VK6.net website, and you're free to use that any time you like. There's a couple here from Brian, Whiskey7JET, W7Jet, a regular News West listener. Brian says, I always enjoy listening via the podcast here in the USA. I really appreciate the perspective on the hobby and use it to help enhance the local Phoenix, Arizona amateur radio conversations. Thanks again for making this available to the world. It is much appreciated. And another comment, I'm a US amateur and really enjoy the show. I appreciate hearing the ideas from VK and actually share what I hear on the podcast with my local hams. I'm a regular check-in on the ANZANET and have worked a few VK6 stations. My wife, Whiskey7EVE, that's a good one, and I had a trip planned to VK in April of this year, but it got washed out for the C word. We are hoping to try again in 2021 as long as the C word is still not causing a disruption. I do, however, miss the old opening music. Well, Brian, we're catering for you today. Listen right through to the end. Now from Wayne, VK6 Victor Echo, on his many perambulations around the state, and on one of his many comments, Wayne says, holidaying in Carnarvon, so I downloaded, then listened to both the WIA and VK6 news. Thanks for once again producing a good news broadcast. It's great to have that feedback and we'd appreciate more. Good, bad or ugly? Not too ugly. Be nice, but be constructive and we're happy.
From the letters to the editor, AR Magazine, September 1950, Press Publicity. Sir, there are occasions when achievements of Australian radio amateurs may be brought before the notice of the public through the medium of the daily newspapers. During a period of emergency, such as traffic handling in flooded areas, it is logical for the news hawks to scout around for a copy. Once that is given to the newspaper, however, it is a matter for conjecture as to what journalistic juggling will be indulged in and in what garbled form the article will appear. Unfortunately, there are occasions where amateur radio is blatantly made use of in the interests of sensationalism. Recently, there has been a glaring example in Sydney, intended no doubt by whoever furnished the copy to tell a story for the WIA. It conveyed a very different idea. In fact, only the last two lines of a page splurged referred to the Institute. My reaction is that the news editor used amateur radio for sheer propaganda purposes, to the effect that USSR amateurs were causing willful and deliberate interference with Australians, that they won't exchange Christian names with us, and other things. For the reason that I am not a very active DX man these days, I do not know if there is any truth in these statements. Perhaps there may be. But my recollection of QSOs, with a few UAs I have worked with on rare occasions, is that they seem to be just like any other amateurs. They most certainly did not hold back their names, like Boris or Stefan, etc. I have always maintained that the real spirit of amateur radio is initially practiced anyway, permits individuals of widely separated creeds and outlook to hold contact with each other with absolutely no thought of ulterior motive. If that is no longer the case, then it is a sad outlook for civilization. If we don't agree with the other fellow's way of life, we don't tell him so, most certainly not by amateur radio. What the daily press does with the amateur radio news it gets hold of is another matter. As a publicity outlet for the WIA, the story I refer to was sufficient reason why in future it would be better not to use such mediums. Some newspapers are merely circulation boosters. They rarely have scruples as to how they do it. Such people see no real news value in amateur radio. They dish up a plethora of distortion gleefully. Better stick to reliable and appropriate magazines of the kind people read because they are interested in radio. D.B. Nock, VK2, November Oscar.
The ACMA recently posted its latest e-bulletin, which contains some interesting articles. Firstly, concerning the revised Foundation Amateur Radio Syllabus, where they say, as advised in our July e-bulletin, we've revised the process for updating the Amateur Radio Syllabus to remove the requirement that the Syllabus Review Panel must approve changes. We have now advised the Australian Maritime College, or AMC, of changes to the Foundation Syllabus, and requested they ensure the amateur radio examinations they conduct, including by its accredited assessors, are based on the revised Foundation Syllabus. The changes relate to removing historical restrictions on Foundation licensees from the Radio Communications Licence Conditions, Amateur Licence Determination 2015, and some editorial changes. The revised syllabus is available on the AMC website. Future changes to the syllabus will be undertaken through the ACMA's usual consultation process with the broader amateur community. We'll let you know when this happens. With regard to the transfer of call signs, to give amateurs more options and flexibility in managing call signs, licensees can now transfer their call sign to another licensee by completing the online call sign transfer form. The application needs to be completed and signed by both parties before it is lodged with the ACMA. With regard to delays in qualification and call sign processing, we're aware of delays in processing applications for amateur radio qualifications and call signs. These have been caused by a surge in applications for new call signs following recent changes to the call sign template, as well as COVID-19 pandemic-related resourcing constraints. The source of these delays is temporary, and the AMC will soon revert to normal processing timeframes. If you'd like to get your licensing notices emailed, email us at info@acma.gov.au and let us know your email address. This way, you'll get your notices faster and reduce paper waste. The next part is a very interesting point to note from the ACMA. We often get questions about whether a licensee has to wait for the Register of Radio Communications Licensees, or RRL, to reflect their license that has been granted before they can start operating an amateur station. The answer is no. The RRL is not updated immediately. As long as you have a receipt of your payment, you are authorised to operate an amateur station under the LCD. Interesting to note.
This is VK6ARN, and you're listening to News West.
In our round of themes for News West next week, we explore the world of new amateurs. What was your experience of being a new amateur? Whether your introduction to amateur radio was last week, last decade, or last century, how about telling us your story? Hearing about your entry into the hobby will prove useful, or at the very least, interesting to newcomers. We've had a few people share their experience with us, so how about you? The usual deal applies. Make your own recording if you can, and send it and or your script as an email attachment to newswest@vk6.net. An alternative is for one of our team to interview you via Skype, Zoom, or similar about your adventures. Contact the team via email at newswest@vk6.net. But wait, there's more. With Jamboree on the air happening around us this weekend, hopefully some good activities have been conducted and well attended. There's bound to be a good story coming out of these activities, and we all look forward to hearing your report on the JOTA activity that you attended. Send your report or story to us by email to newswest@vk6.net.
Good morning once again, Roy. VK6 X-Ray Victor with this week's hotline for the 18th of October 2020. What do I have for you today? We'll have a quick look. We've got a wanted looking for a HP Spectrum analyzer, preferably working or not. We'll consider both. But please, if you have a Hewlett-Packard, any model, any details, please could you contact Martin, VK6 Zulu Oscar, looking for a Hewlett-Packard Spectrum analyzer. And willing to pay for it, up to $250. He says he may be dreaming, but give it a go. If you have a HP spec, please contact Martin, VK6 Zulu Oscar, on 0400-879-770. Again, that 0400-879-770. And if you can help Martin out, that would be great. And also help Kai. He's still looking for anyone with any information or anyone with a antenna, loop antenna for HF, I presume, for a small area in an upstairs unit. And he's looking for anyone who can help him out there. There was a person at the Hamfest last that had a business card, gave it to him, but Kai's thrown that away with the rest of the rubbish, but I don't know whether he's done that, but he can't find it anyway. Anyway, if you could go help Kai, please go contact Kai, VK6 Kilo Sierra Juliet at westnet.com.au. Without the... I'll try that again. Victor Kilo 6 Kilo Sierra Juliet at westnet.com.au. And also here for sale, we have a heavy-duty rotator, an antenna rotator plus cable and control and power supply, all complete and working well. You're asking $380. That's $380. Location Mandurah. For more information, please phone Craig in Mandurah, 0407 407 375. Again, 0407 407 375. That's all for me for this week. Anyone like to call with any information for next week, or email me, the email address victorkilo6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. victorkilo6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. Thank you once again. Keep healthy, wealthy and wise. We'll catch you next week. Cheers, 7-3.
Well, that was a lot of history, wasn't it? There will be a test next week and the pass mark is 80%. Nah, just joking. It's actually 90%. All jokes aside, I hope the history proved interesting to you, and I do encourage you to forage through the old amateur radio magazines and any other old publications you can find, or get onto the Trove website. If you haven't looked there before, just do it. Just about every newspaper ever published in Australia has been digitised, and it uses a powerful search engine. If you do dig up anything interesting, just download the text and send it to us for the next history edition of News West. It's that simple. And thanks to the team this week and to the broadcasters and callback collectors. You're a great bunch of listeners out there. If for any reason you're unable to participate in the on-air callbacks, jump onto the VK6.net website and record your callback there. Meanwhile, let's finish off this week with the old theme music, which we jokingly refer to as the banjo music, just for Brian Whiskey 7 JET, just for Auld Lang Syne. Meanwhile, don't waste any time. The weather's glorious. It's time to get out there, to get on air, and to make some noise.